Dance of the Wash, Kid Folks Touching, The Evangelist, She Saw Slavery. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Krissa Hewitt, and this is Ears on Art, a twice-monthly program devoted to exploring the visual arts. Today, my co-host Stephen DeLuque and I continue our conversations with Joe Schwartz, photographer, and gallery owner and agent Michael Shapiro. Joe died just a couple of weeks ago, a few months shy of his 100th birthday. A resident of Atascadero for many years, he developed many friendships on the Central Coast, and one of those was with Harvey Levinson. Harvey has been the department head of graphic communications at Cal Poly for close to 30 years. We are going to let him begin today's program with a brief description of how the two came to be such good friends and a major project that they worked on together. Here now is Harvey Levinson.
Well, I met Joe Schwartz shortly after I arrived in Central California, which is about 30 years ago. And the way I met him is quite interesting. His grandson grew up with my son when the boys were 4 and 5 years old in kindergarten, elementary school. You meet people through your children. And in getting to talk, we learned that we have a few threads in common in that his grandson's mother's roots and Joe's roots are from New York City, as are my roots. And I learned that Joe was raised in Brooklyn, New York, and so was I. And I learned that he was raised in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn, and so did I. So basically, Joe and I were raised in the same neighborhood a generation and a half apart. So needless to say, we had some common experiences to share. And when I was invited to his home, I walked into his house, and it was like walking into a museum, an art gallery. I couldn't believe what I saw. 3 floors of these wonderful photographs, and they all seemed to have a common theme. And Joe's theme was documenting the have-nots of America, turns out from the 1930s to the 1980s. And he had these wonderful photographs, most of which were taken in New York City, focusing on the African-American community. And really his theme was, you know, we can all get along, and I have photographs to prove that. And it was just an amazing collection, but it struck me in more ways than just Joe being from New York, and I'm from New York, he's from Brooklyn, I'm from Brooklyn, but his theme. And I had to show it to my young child at that time. I have 2 children, they're adopted and they're African Americans. And Joe's work focused on the African Americans in New York City and across the country in Los Angeles, the plight that they faced, and how people of different races can get along and interact with each other. And I brought my son over to his house, and he fell in love with the photography and with Joe, and he would do anything for Joe, as he has done for years and years and years. But the essence of Joe Schwartz is Joe is a humanist at heart. I've often said that Joe's character is similar to that of a Mother Teresa. He understands the plight of the have-nots. He understands the plight of those who've been discriminated against. He understands the plight of those who are trying to get their fair share of life in our society in the United States. And in looking at all these pictures, depicting the promise of the races, being able to get along and be equal, it occurred to me that this needs to be a book. And I mentioned that to Joe. And he said, well, yeah, that's my plan. That's what I was hoping to do all these years. I said, Joe, let's do it. And my background is in printing and publishing. As head of the graphic communication department at Cal Poly, I know how to put books together. And to make a very long story short, we assembled his work. A good friend of his, who is the IT person for the Atascadero News, actually did the digital scans, but from then we brought it to Cal Poly, did all the pre-press work, and basically published the book here. Our press was not big enough for this project, so my good friend Richard Blake, who is the president of Blake Printery, which is now Poor Richard's Press, donated press time actually produce the book on his press, supervised by our faculty and Joe, and we produced this amazing book. Now, this book took on roots that we never thought it would. Basically, that book has connected the city of Atascadero and Cal Poly with Washington, D.C., and the Smithsonian Institution. The Smithsonian is in the process of building its 19th and last museum on the Mall. It is a museum that's dedicated to the history and culture of African Americans in the United States. They learned about this book, Joe's photographs, taken from his book, will be the first and permanent exhibit in the National Museum of African American History and Culture that's going to be opening up in 2015 in Washington, D.C. Not many museums of the Smithsonian have permanent exhibits. Joe's will be a permanent exhibit. That's the impact that his photograph potentially can have on society. And finally, what Joe once said to me, he says, my goal is to make a difference. I don't care whether I make a difference today, tomorrow, 100 years from now. I want to be able to make a difference.
Oh, that is such a great story. Thank you so much for being part of all of this.
Well, it's my pleasure. I can sit and talk about Joe for hours.
That was Harvey Levinson speaking with me yesterday. Stephen and I now return to our program, recorded in 2005, featuring photographer Joe Schwartz and gallery owner Michael Shapiro. These interviews were conducted separately, and we have woven them together in hopes of giving you a little better understanding of the depth of Joe's work, both from his words and from those of not only an admirer, but a person who has done quite a bit to help get Joe on the scene, as they say. As you may remember from our last program, Michael Shapiro, he discovered the work of Joe Schwartz about 5 years ago when he was given a copy of Joe's book, Folk Photography, The Poems I've Never Written. Our story today is the story of Joe, a photographer, for the most part, self-taught, and certainly self-motivated. Joe has spent his life photographing regular people doing regular things. We began the program today with titles from some of Joe's works. The words he uses are just as insightful as the images that he has taken. Here are some of his thoughts about being, in his words, a folk photographer. Originally, photography was to supplement my artwork in later years of high school, which proved not practical. Money to buy materials was scarce, and I had little knowledge about the use of the camera. A very talented person, David Robbins, taught me, first, how to use a brush in painting signs, how to cut a stencil for both silk screening and mimeographing, and to top it off, convinced me to join an organization, the Photo League of New York City, where he was a leading member and instructor. In him, I found a new friend who was involved in similar social activities in Brownsville, Brooklyn. I led a Photo League workshop on nationalities in Manhattan and was constantly exposed to the verbal exercises and photo presentations offered by member greats such as Margaret Bourke White, Dorothea Lange, Sid Grossman, Arnold Eagle, Ruth Orkin, Eugene Smith, and Walter Rosenblum. This gave me enormous inspirational energy to record the city life surrounding us. Monthly meetings were charged with emotional, enthusiastic arguments, usually over utilization of techniques of lighting, composition, and social attitudes, which were reflected in the photographer's documentary contents. I leaned heavily toward the side of Disraeli, an ardent promoter of strictly available light documentaries. Intense league meetings emphasizing awareness of social issues and humanitarian high standards and values, being surrounded by dedicated artists and humanists, along with discussions and criticisms, constructive and destructive, all were invaluable experiences for me. I knew then my direction in photography. I was already familiar with the subject matter I wanted to deal with. One-third of the nation ill-fed, ill-housed, and ill-clothed, as President Roosevelt put it. Dignity of persons pictured, especially those from the stratum of have-nots, was to be my main concern.
This is right in the back of my house. They were out there just playing, you know, enjoying. And I opened up to, I looked through the window and so on, and they saw me with a camera.
They're playing guitars.
That's what they were doing.
This is Dizzy that we're looking at.
Dizzy
did you get introduced to him? Was it
Chance meeting? There was a lady who did a lot of work with jazz artists, and she was doing a round with Dizzy Gillespie, and we went to various stations and took some of those photos with different stations, different places.
We have here a poster titled In Memory of Dizzy Gillespie, great musician and humanist. Five individual photos, one of them playing his trumpet.
Yeah, that's his own self-modified trumpet is what he played. He liked the bowl to tilt up. So it was
named for it, and I've forgotten what it was now.
There is another photograph.
Well,
oh, there it is
here.
On your door.
Yes, right there.
Yes, Sarah Vaughan, Louis Armstrong, Billie Holiday, and David Howard.
Yeah, David Howard, father owned the Oasis, Club Oasis on Western Avenue.
Did you frequent jazz clubs, or was it something that people took you
I wish
there for
I had
specific?
Done, but I, you know, I didn't have the money. We started to go to jazz clubs in New York. This, was, of course, was in California. This is Hazel Scott. That's an old-timer. Beautiful lady and played beautifully. She is very few of the, well, there's hardly anybody that played and sang at the same time. And that's Sarah Vaughan.
Right.
You know, that was at that time when I took the four musicians.
In our phone interview with Michael, Stephen DeLuque and I, and Michael, each had copies of Joe's book. So we were having fun thumbing through the pages and finding different ones that caught our interest. I'm looking at another double page here that is interesting in that this happens to be tracks to pizzeria and tracks to a Fox Theater. Much more architectural and basically showing train tracks.
Elevated railways.
Elevated.
Right. Qualities of the city that made New York and these other cities distinctive from the rest of the country.
These, once again, are very sculptural photographs and the ability to really capture that sense of the living condition. This is part of lifestyle. These are obviously not the projects right here, but they certainly are showing a sense of age.
And all very relevant today.
Yeah.
One of the photographs that I really loved in his collection, which has had to me for a tremendous social poignancy, was the young African-American child playing in front of a wall that said, "Dirty Nigger Bastards," that was
incredible.
Scrawled across it. You
know. Is that a political picture or what?
It was heart-wrenching.
And may I just bring up one that I didn't think I would bring up? There's a photograph of a man looking very stern, a white man with a hat, looking very stern on a subway. And behind him to the right is a Rice Krispies ad. And to his left, someone has painted in on the glass window between cars, Kill All Jews, 1940s. It's called Kill All Jews, A Train, New York.
Okay.
And I feel very great about selling a print of this, maybe the only print that Joe made of this, to an Austrian man. We thought it would be a very important thing to bring back to Austria.
Those two photographs are side by side in the book.
Right. And the way that he happens to have positioned the man in this case, I mean, we're only seeing him from half his chin up.
Right.
He's down at the base of the picture, and these two images loom over his head, right?
That's a very conscious picture Joe made.
The compositions of his photographs are absolutely astounding to me. It seems to be very innate in how he selects these types of imagery and the angles in which he took them and the perspective, but they are absolutely incredibly beautifully formatted.
Yeah, that's the artistic side.
Has he taught himself pretty much all of his darkroom techniques?
I would say that Joe, with the inspiration of Photo League, is mostly self-taught.
Were you doing your own darkroom work?
Yeah, and I couldn't do too well. That's one reason why I thought I was a little discouraged, because I didn't think I did too well, but I did pretty good, mm-hmm. actually. I was getting too fussy. This one first place, believe it or not, but I didn't know that for several years. What was the name of the actor's family?
Wasn't the Barrymores?
Roald Barrymores.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah, Lionel Barrymore.
Uh-huh.
He judged that. He judged the whole thing, and I wasn't there. And I didn't even know anything about it until I came to Santa Monica and I saw the photo in a store, in a photo store. And I says, hey, you know, what's that doing in there? He says, somebody, they got first prize, and they showed me this plaque. I don't have the plaque. I don't know where it went. But I was in another housing project, living in another housing project somewhere, and nobody knew where I was.
They may not have known its whereabouts, but Joe wasn't shooting pictures for fame and fortune. Then, as now, his life has been about being an activist.
And that's Paul Robeson on that side.
Yes, yes.
Well, that was the third-party candidate right here. He was vice president of the President Roosevelt at that time. But they kicked him out, of course, and put Truman in.
Mm-hmm.
They started this third-party movement. And I took a lot of photos of that. Now, here we have a particular ship Captain Mulzak had taken, and he wouldn't take the ship unless it were integrated.
Mm-hmm.
I have several shots of that. This was in Ohio. It was a convention at the NAACP. Here you have Joe Lewis, of course, and next to him, Justice of Supreme Court.
Thurgood Marshall.
Thurgood Marshall, but this was when he was just a lawyer working for the civil rights.
Right.
Well, this was a police brutality type thing. I had a couple of things like that I was asked to take photographs of.
Mm-hmm.
This is Adam Clayton Powell. That was at...
what's the captain's?
Captain Mulzak's dinner.
Well, not only is there the documentation of people, but I'm also looking at this one here with Nesbitt's California Orange and just, some of those...
That's an old-timer.
Products that are so long gone, and it takes you back, getting the children in the street.
It became a part of it,
became a part of it.
It became a part of it because I felt that it's an identity kind of a thing, you know. I always had a purpose for my whatever I photograph. Yeah.
If you have just tuned in, you're listening to Ears on Art. Today's guests are Joe Schwartz, photographer, and his gallery agent, Michael Shapiro. We continue now with Joe talking about his involvement with the Photo League of New York City, a group of very famous photographers, and where Joe really got his start.
Well, there's a lot of other things I would have loved to have documented. Of course, that's the kind of organization I belonged to. It was documentaries. They were interested in documentaries, and they had a lot of... great people that were doing the documenting, and I recognized that, and I felt lucky that I've talked to them. I've had some conversations with them, and I've listened to them argue. A lot of times, well-known photographers would come up and then criticize them and give us a critique, which was interesting. There were some that even argued about the lighting and so on,
And the name of
called
that group?
The Photo League.
That was the Photo League.
That's right.
I was
one of the beginners.
Beginners.
We had a place in New York, one of the 20th Street streets. I forgot which one, 24th or 25th. They had a dark room there where, especially a friend of mine, there was a dark room person there. And he let me come and watch him work in his photo dark room. And I learned the little things from him, especially dodging. I saw him working around with his hands, dodging, and never forget that. David Robbins is his name.
How many years was it in operation, or has it even broken
up? I didn't stay too long. I just went in and out, you know. He introduced me to some Life magazine, and some people would say, well, we'd like your photography, but it just didn't seem to be up to what they would have expected. I don't know, really. And I was discouraged. So occasionally I do what I had to do, and I tried to make some decent prints and so on. I visited the liberal New York Post, and I was discouraged there. They and others had said that my photography was too really controversial.
That was the word I was thinking might pop up. So this was for the 40s and early 50s?
No, it was before the 50s.
Before the 50s, so sure. 30s, 40s.
That's right. One of the controversial, sure, they were controversial by down south. It was these two kids on the bench that you saw, you know, in the housing project, laughing and enjoying each other's company. Somebody bought one, I think it was around $5 they paid me for it. And she had taken it down south, I don't know whether one of the Carolinas, I think. And she got fired the next day. She hung it up in the front of the classroom. So I understand, I was told this. It was controversial down there. Two different people on the bench. That makes it controversial.
Right.
You know, you're trying to integrate people. How do you, you know, that was too radical, that's for sure. You know, you don't do things like that, and you don't say that's a good thing. Well, evidently I was doing that. I was saying it was a good thing for people to get along. And I'm sorry to say that a lot of photographers that were good photographers took wonderful pictures but didn't get into that area.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see that. Now, maybe they saw it, and maybe they didn't. I don't know. Or even though you had some people taking photos of Harlem, but they took photos of Harlem. That was it. Didn't show people integrating in any way.
Well, I used the term career a little while ago, and that almost makes it sound like a job. And this has really been just a lifetime's work, I think, more than anything that we could call a job.
Yeah. No, it's not a job. None of these are being paid for so far. Maybe today I have an agent now that comes down, and he comes from San Francisco just to get my things to sell.
And you also are in a few museum collections?
Oh, yeah.
Which?
Yeah, several.
Which ones come to mind?
Well, Getty Museum has about 14 of my photos. Another museum in Ohio that has several, about 7 or 8.
That's always an interesting process for some of us who figure that that's never going to happen in our lives. Did they approach you?
Oh, yeah.
We turn now to Michael Shapiro for a little more insight on this process. In terms of collections, were you in part, or were you the responsible party for getting his work into the Getty, or
yes.
And what other museums?
I was partially responsible. There were two of us who approached the Getty simultaneously. That's a great, great honor.
It certainly is.
Because there aren't many better collections. And the Getty, I want to say, has a very interesting collection focus in which Joe Schwartz fell, and that was they collect East Coast photographers who came west. It's a very interesting focus. People collect photography for all different subject matters.
Mm-hmm.
The Getty has a lot of profound ones. I'm really happy. They bought more than I thought they would. Joe was so happy, and I was thrilled, and we're glad Joe's in there.
Well, absolutely. Those of us on this end that live in his now hometown are very appreciative of your efforts to both help people get acquainted with his work and to help make sure that it stays in front of people via mm-hmm. collections such as the Getty.
Right.
You're in your 90s. You're in the Getty. What's next? We turn back to Joe.
What types of things have been recent? Are you still walking around with your camera a lot, or whenever you can?
Not really. I've got to learn how to do the digital thing, and I'm copying a lot of stuff, and I'm having some friends of mine copy stuff. I've got a lot of stuff that I collected myself mm-hmm. that really the museum should have, you know. So I'm working it out mm-hmm. somehow. I'm getting a hold of some of the museums.
Stephen Joe and I left his studio and went and sat in his living room. We made sure at this point that we got a copy of the book.
Looking here at the book that we've been talking about called Folk Photography, Poems I've Never Written by Joe Schwartz.
Pretty smart, don't you think?
Pretty smart, is right.
I got it from from somebody that wrote that. And they said, that this is poetry. They wrote it in one of my exhibits. And I call it folk photography. Why not, you know?
The word folk could be seen in a couple of different ways.
That's
obviously,
right.
You're taking pictures of folk,
well,
and yet it's
people,
also very homegrown and very
right.
down to earth.
That's right. Well, the people I talk to, they consider themselves folk, you know. The folk dancing, folk art, why not folk photography? A lot of people ask me, you know, what's folk photography? Make up your own mind.
I don't think too many people could be looking at this book and not very quickly get a sense
I should
that
think
they
so.
Could find a definition for themselves.
I should think so, yeah. And I've been getting letters from different people now, and they're telling me how much they like the thing and how much newer. Everything seems to be new every time they open up the book. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. That's just what I want to hear, you know.
So,
you know.
Michael Shapiro is quite certain that he knows where to find the true Joe Schwartz.
Well, the answers are in the pictures. The
Absolutely.
Proof is in the pudding. And these are great images, great prints from a very significant period of time. And he is the horse's mouth. Well, in conclusion, I'll just say that he's a hero of mine. And he's enriched my life as a dealer and as just a person to learn about his work. It's remarkable.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Joe, this has just been a really very informative and gracious amount of time that you have given us. And we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate your coming.
You have been listening to Ears on Art. Our guests today have been Harvey Levinson, Michael Shapiro, and the person of the day, Joe Schwartz. The majority of this program was recorded in 2005. A memorial for Joe Schwartz will take place this Sunday, April 14th, at 2:30 p.m. at the Atascadero Lake Pavilion Building. Co-host Stephen DeLuque and I produce this program here at KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Thank you so much for listening.